Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
He heard it.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count. Wow. Here comes a midget. And it's all over. It's all over. First round knockout. He's out. Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to another edition of the MMA Report Podcast on Radio Influence with Dale Galvan. I am Jason Floyd, and coming up on this week's episode of the podcast, I will tell you some information I have learned this week about the Bellator streaming deal with DAZN in relation to Bellator International events. We'll recap what happened last week at Bellator 204 and PFL 6, get you ready for Saturday's UFC Lincoln. Plus, we're going to discuss the ticket sales for UFC 29, have our weekly buy-sell segment, and you're going to hear my interviews with Alex Hernandez, Chito Vera, and Greg Rebello. Daniel, how's your week going, man?
Jason, it's going quite well. We had a nice little weekend of MMA, non-UFC MMA, then we got a good UFC event this week. So it's going, man, just like the MMA world is constantly churning. How about you? I know you were in Nashville, Tennessee for NFL preseason. What was your thoughts on the country music capital, Jason?
I'm not a country music guy, but after the game, one of the rare occasions where I actually stay in the town that night and went down to Broadway, which is basically their Bourbon Street, and let's just say some very good people watching, since I didn't get down there till about 12:30. Very, very good people watching, but had a good time. You'll appreciate this, Daniel. You know, walk into the booth, and we had a little water situation in the booth because it was raining, so we had to get that corrected, and because sure as hell was not putting out electrical equipment with a little bit of water in the booth. But no, man, I had a good time. Actually, a really nice booth there in Nashville at Nissan Stadium. Very familiar, pretty much the same design as Raymond James Stadium here in Tampa. And so for the last 2 weeks of the preseason, I'm at home, which means Bucks play on Friday night this week. So Saturday night, I can enjoy the UFC Lincoln card, which the best way I would describe that card is I guess we're going to find out if James Vick's a top 10 lightweight.
Absolutely. If Justin Gaethje is a guarantee for excitement and guarantee to let you know how quality a fighter is, it's a pretty simple litmus test. You go out there, you go toe-to-toe with Justin Gaethje, and you beat him, you're top 10 lightweight. And James Vick has been a fighter, man, who may have already had that talent level of being a top 10 lightweight for years upon years, but because of the level of competition he's faced, despite how impressive some of his win streaks have gone, this is finally the moment where you can kind of go home and say, this dude's absolutely a top lightweight contender. And that, to me, there are some nice fights littered there, but I look at this UFC card, and the one fight that's bringing me to the TV to watch it live is absolutely James Vick, Justin Gaethje. Because again, there are a few fighters on the UFC roster. There may not even be one fighter on the UFC roster that I look forward to watching fight more than Justin Gaethje at this point. Because I know when he goes in the cage, Jason, it's going to be a damn firefight.
Oh, exactly. Of course, we'll get into this fight night card a little later on here in the podcast. But I want to start this week's podcast by talking about some details I've learned about the Bellator DAZN deal. And really what kind of caught my eye was ultimately from a press release that Bellator sent out on Monday of this week, which was officially announcing the event that's going to take place in Israel on November the 15th, 2018. And it was in the second paragraph of this press release where it says, tickets are on sale now, da-da-da. You know, and then it says the event will air Friday, November 16th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central Time on Paramount Network, and can also be streamed on DAZN. Which, you know, first off, you know, one thing you'll immediately know is, once again, this is an Israel card that's going to be on essentially a 24-hour plus tape delay on Paramount. But then, you know, as I'm sitting here, I'm going, hold on. Daniel, maybe it was me. Maybe my perception was wrong on this, and I'll get your thoughts. But wasn't your take that the DAZN streaming deal was to end tape delay shows?
That's exactly what I thought it was, Jason. I think if you go back too, when we first talked about the streaming service and we called it DAZN back in the DAZN days, that first podcast, I believe that was a part of our discussion. And maybe we got the wrong message. Or maybe if we go back and we pull through the quotes, we'll see that maybe there is some inconsistency. But I remember, and up until you showed me this, my general thought process was every Bellator event would be live on DAZN. Even there, and to me, I don't know if – do you think we just received the message incorrectly, or do you think that was the original idea?
That it seems like, from based on it, we'll get to some things that I've learned here earlier on this week, where it seems that maybe our perception was a little wrong. So I reached out to a Bellator official, and I said – and this was exactly what I wrote. I said, I take this event will air on DAZN on November 15th. Or will it not stream on DAZN until November 16th at 9 p.m. Eastern time, which would be the time that's going to air on the Paramount Network? And the response I got was, plans are for this simulcast with the Paramount Network broadcast, which I will say I did reach. I responded to that, didn't get an answer. So I said, okay, let me reach out to the DAZN people. And so this is a response that I got from DAZN. Quote, currently, all the DAZN exclusive will be live/live, where the hell, I don't know what live/live means. I'm guessing it just means it's live. Goes on to say, the DAZN simulcasts are currently planned to air at the same time as Paramount Networks. We haven't addressed it yet with the Tel Aviv card since it was just announced. So this is kind of the two things I take. First off, tape delay clearly is not ending for Bellator, which once again, why are we not ending tape delay? But the other thing it said to me, Daniel, was that it tells me that the big Bellator fights are all going to be on DAZN, because if you're DAZN and you're paying, remember that was reported as a 9-figure deal for 5 years, they're expecting big fights. So I look at this and say, I don't expect that we're going to see a lot of big fights on Paramount.
Yeah, I really don't either. And it's almost like the Bellator events on Paramount are not appointment viewing television. And it's almost like an afterthought. I think it would be just a huge nail in the coffin to Paramount if they actually aired those fights live on DAZN. Because, I mean, there would just be such... I would assume you would have no hardcore fan watching the fight on Paramount if that was the case, and maybe that's the reason why. Maybe that's a Paramount decision, having leverage there and saying that we're not going to allow that to happen. That's going to impact our viewership. So moving forward, I think it was pretty much the idea, but it's abundantly more clear, Jason, that you look at your Bellator roster and you pick and choose the top 25 most valuable guys. I think you're only going to see one or two of those guys on the Paramount Network, and those will likely be fights where they are heavy favorites fighting in different European or Asian countries.
I mean, let's be honest about it. I don't think Rory McDonald ever fights on Paramount.
Yeah, not unless he fights, like, I don't know, Nowod Lahat. Like, Nowod Lahat puts on, like, 70 pounds, and then they fight in Bosnia. Like that's the one time we see those guys fight, is when they're fighting international, and it's, like, a huge mismatch.
It's already been out there. I mean, it's in the press release that all the welterweight tournament fights are going to be on DAZN. Those are exclusive to DAZN. I mean, it's, you know, I think when you look at Bellator is doing a lot of great things right now. And honestly, outside of Conor Khabib, which clearly is the best thing the UFC has going for it right now, I'm more interested in what is going on in Bellator than I am in the UFC. It's just, I mean, anyone who's listened to this podcast for any amount of time, you know, we don't BS you. We tell you how we feel. We're brutally honest, and it's going to piss off some people. But, you know, one of the things that if you tune into this podcast, we want you to know how we feel. When you talk about it's probably the biggest complaint there is in Bellator in terms of the fans, it is these international tape delay shows. And so, you know, when I kind of got this information, I was just in shock, Daniel. I'm sitting there going, your biggest issue with your fans in the United States is they want to see these. There is a group of the MMA fan base that if it's a Friday afternoon show, they want to watch your show live. And if you put it on a premium, you know, streaming package, they're going to buy that premium streaming package. So I just don't understand why they're continuing to be in the tape delay business. But I'll say this. and this is no inside information. This is just my perception of the situation. I don't think Bellator is on Paramount in the long run. I think that, you know, if you look at the Paramount programming, you look at what Bellator is, they just don't fit each other.
Oh, yeah. The second they changed from Spike TV to Paramount, you knew the direction of the channel was changing dramatically. I mean, when I see Paramount, the first thing I think is movies, reruns, stuff like that, original, you know, programming. I don't think Spike TV, I don't think Cops, and I don't think mixed martial arts. The mood of the channel was changing, and we certainly got an understanding of that when they tested out Bellator on CMT. You know, maybe if that took off, the transition would have been completely to CMT. Maybe there's that intersection of people who like Larry the Cable Guy and also enjoy watching people punch each other in the face. And I don't mean to disparage CMT. I'm a big fan when they aired Hogan Knows Best back in the day. It just seems like this tape delay is not a real issue for Bellator Brass. We have seen quotes from Scott Coker where he has recognized that this is something they're working to eradicate and get rid of. But the actions don't necessarily match up with the rhetoric, Jason. I think the tape delays will be gone one day, but that one day will happen when Bellator will no longer air their shows on Paramount. So it's not really a proactive approach to make these shows live. So I think the message here is we will not get live shows as long as Bellator's on Paramount.
I think there's, you know, if I was in Scott Coker's position and I'm looking at the networks I think are ideal for the Bellator brand, my number one choice for 2019 would be FS1. That's where I would want to go. And I think there's a lot of branding you could do with Bellator and FS1 in terms of showing old Bellator fights just, you know, in the middle of the day throughout FS1 because FS2, because without the UFC, FS1 and FS2 have to, you know, they've got to build, you know, there's somehow they got to fill up all these hours that the UFC content was on. And two, I think Showtime would be my second option.
And I think he should absolutely pursue that because although obviously they are putting a lot of chips into the zone basket, it's not a smart move to not have your product on TV. Just because having your product on TV has so much more value than having it on a pacer to present day when it comes to building an audience. I mean, the viewership numbers for these welterweight tournament fights, Jason, are going to be among, I think, the smallest viewership numbers Bellator have for any of their events. I don't know if you disagree here, but I would be surprised if we get more than 100,000 people subscribing to DAZN to watch Bellator. I could be wrong in that number, in that assumption, but you're basically saying, what would these Bellator cards do on pay-per-view? And maybe I'm wrong for the first card, but over time, I think it's going to normalize to a number under 100,000.
Yeah, I mean, it's when you look at that first event, that I will say, you know, I think a lot of people are going to buy it, but I mean, look, that's going to be essentially, you're going to get that for free because, you know, DAZN has talked about the first 30 days are going to be free, which is kind of interesting because you got the Anthony Joshua fight, which I want to say is on September 16th. And then you've got the, you know, the Bellator event on September 29th. So it'll be interesting to see there. I mean, I still think if you're a cord cutter, Bellator being on DAZN is a great thing because you have the ability to, you know, legally watch every Bellator event free. We'll get into a little bit more on Bellator here momentarily when we recap Bellator 204. But another note I wanted to mention before we get into a Bellator event was earlier this week, I was on the Nevada Commission website and I noticed that there's going to be a hearing on Wednesday of this week. Now, we're recording this here on late Tuesday evening. Of course, this podcast comes out every Wednesday morning on RadioFluence.com. And of course, we appreciate everyone listening. If you're not subscribing, rate and reviewing this show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, really would appreciate that. Really would love some five-star reviews. And if you give us a five-star review, we'll definitely mention you here on next week's podcast. But I saw that the Nevada has a hearing. And one of the things, and every time Nevada has a hearing, I like to kind of go through it just and look to see what MMA, you know, news and notes items are on there. You know, one of the items is related to UFC 229, which we'll get into in a little bit. Just basically a formality of the fact of them just approving the event. But under new business, under items number 5 and 6, is hearing on disciplinary complaint, or in the alternative, hearing of proposed adjudication agreement for mixed martial arts Anthony Hernandez and Jordan Williams. Now, if you follow the Contender Series, you know that both of those fighters were recent winners on the Contender Series. And I reached out to the Nevada Commission, reached out to their management teams as well, and it was on Tuesday that the Nevada Commission did confirm to me that both fighters tested positive for marijuana metabolites, which, of course, Daniel, you know, when I put that out there, my mentions were going crazy, you know, most notably on why are we still testing for marijuana. But I did look it up. You know, the state of Nevada is at the WADA code, which is 150 milligrams per milliliter. Now, I'm not a doctor, but I will tell you that being a producer of a cannabis podcast, I've learned a lot about cannabis over the last 2 months or so. But the one thing I've always been kind of told about when it comes to the WADA level for marijuana, that to test above that level, you literally have to smoke, or I shouldn't say smoke, take part in some type of marijuana, because, you know, there's one of the things learning is now there's these THC pills that a lot of people use to help sleep. And, basically a test above that limit, you have to, ingest some marijuana just a couple days before the fight. So, you kind of look at that and you just say I understand people are complaining about it, but as a fighter, if you probably stop smoking or taking marijuana a week before the fight, you're probably in the clear.
Yeah, I mean, there's two ways to look at this, man. There's a way of just, if we accept the rule as it stands, it's outrageous to fail a test like this. It is outrageous. If you are a manager listening to this podcast, it is your duty to inform your fighter to get off weed a week before his fight. Just do that. You'll be in the clear. Maybe 2 weeks. I don't know how long it lasts in your system. But in order to pass or fail this test, it really requires a lack of understanding and a lack of discipline if you're aware of the information. It's not hard to piss clean and still have a marijuana dependency or like to smoke it recreationally. So there's the first way of looking at it. The second way of looking at it is it's pretty dumb that marijuana is a substance here, a banned substance, even at a small, small scale. I just don't even think it should be tested for or punished at all. I just find it kind of outrageous. I think marijuana probably goes hand in hand with combat sports. I'm not a marijuana user myself. Or am I? Who knows? I'm not going to admit it to you, government. But what I will say is it makes sense for people who compete in combat sports to use marijuana to recover, to relax, because this is an incredibly physically demanding sport. So that's the kind of two I look at it, Jason. One, it's important to note how dumb it is to fail a test like this. Two, it's pretty dumb to test for marijuana anyway.
I mean, look, I think a high percentage of MMA fighters use marijuana, but I don't think that it's about quote unquote getting high. I think a majority of them are using this as a form of recovery, to kind of help them get through it. I mean, one of the things, and this is more of my perception based on talking to people on the regulatory side over the years, I think ultimately the reason that marijuana is not off the ban list is I just don't think they don't want someone, sitting in the back and partaking in marijuana and then makes the walk to the cage or the ring. I think that's ultimately why marijuana is still on the ban list, but it's not like, 4 or 5 years ago when the threshold was 50 milligrams per milliliter, it's now 150. So it is, kind of out there, but I hope that both these guys don't get 9 month suspensions. I think that's ridiculous. I mean, give him a 3 month suspension, which really doesn't really mean anything for a fighter. Let's be honest about it. And, the unfortunate thing is, both these guys made $10,000 on the night that they won on the Contender Series. How much of the commission is going to take from that? I mean, because most likely this was probably the biggest payday of their career.
Absolutely. And that's again why, if you're a manager, it's imperative to communicate fighter, especially as they're getting their career going. They may not be aware of this, and I think that was the case here. I think this is a case where both these guys are really having significant regret over what happened, and I think knowing the information, of when is a good time to stop using marijuana before a fight would have saved them a lot of money in the bank account. It really sucks. And again, I understand the situation you're getting at, where maybe they're concerned that, a fighter will smoke a doobie before heading to the cage. But I just think that example is so rare that it's not worth it to punish guys like this.
Well, I think my other question about marijuana, and I can tell you I've brought this up with the executive directors, is how do you handle that situation if the fighter has a medical marijuana card?
That's a great question that I don't know how to answer. And
I mean, because I live in a state where, you know, you can get a medical marijuana card. Now, in the state of Florida, you can't smoke in public. You know, it's not like you can be at a park and you know, be taking your medical marijuana. But that's the one thing I've always kind of wondered is, you know, if someone has a condition on why they, you know, take medical marijuana, whatever it is. I mean, I state of Florida, there's like a whole list of things to how you can get a card. And that's just one of the things I've always wondered is what if there's a legitimate medical reason why they have a medical marijuana card? And I think that's also kind of where this becomes a touchy situation for all parties.
Absolutely. And I think the only thing I can bring a comparison to is maybe individuals who had a legitimate medical reason for TRT back in the day, and they were exempt. And I feel like that would be the case here. If you have that, you should be exempt. And again, my general takeaway is marijuana should not be tested for. But under the current rules, I think the general understanding would be if you have a medical marijuana prescription, you should be – I don't know, man, because that's a tough one. Again, because we have not really heard of something like that publicly, and I'm not even sure that's something commissions or fighters would advertise.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think about with the marijuana laws in California, where a lot of fighters are based out of. Jordan Williams, I know, is based out of California. So it'd be interesting to kind of see what happens on Wednesday, and hopefully it's not a long suspension. Hopefully they don't, you know, hopefully they don't try to take too much money out of these guys' pocket, because I'm sure that that was obviously very career changing moment for both of those guys. But of course, we did mention about Bellator; they did have the event last weekend, Bellator 204. Daniel, I texted you during this event because I was watching it live. I was doing some laundry because I had an early morning flight on Saturday, and I like to say how I'm just brutally honest here. I turned it off after the co-main event because I was so tired. I couldn't stay up any longer. It wasn't because of the fights, but I will tell you this, man. Bellator is getting on that FS1 pacing though. Oh my goodness! I think it was. The first fight ended like around like 9:20 Eastern time. The next fight didn't start to like 9:50 Eastern time.
That's unacceptable. It really is. I mean, that's insane to have a half hour block in between combat on TV. It's just asking your viewers to change the channel, or asking your viewers like you to, you know, pull an old man move and take a men's sleep at like 9:50 Eastern time. Or I know you got up to the co-main events. That probably got you to what, 10:45?
10:30-ish, somewhere in there. I mean, I was struggling, Daniel, man. I was like, and honestly, I would have gone to bed earlier, but I needed to get some clothes washed for my flight the next day. But man, I was dead tired. It was just, cause I remember I'm sitting there after the Taiwan Claxton fight. I'm sitting there going, guys, like, I get you're trying to promote your product, but it was just, I mean, we both know this in the broadcast industry. What they're doing, they're filling up time more than anything else. That's exactly what they're doing. But man, I was just like, oh God. But I'll tell you, obviously the two big notes of this card is A, Darian Caldwell, he did not get the Ember Report jinx like we thought might happen last week. Just completely dominating performance over Noah Lahat, straight domination until he got the finish there in the second round. But of course, the other big story was James Gallagher, getting knocked out in the first round by Ricky Bandejas, of course, who was making his Bellator debut, the former CFFC champion. And, when Gallagher lost, I'm not surprised by the reaction from the MMA community. I think we all saw this coming, but you know, let's also remember, you know, and I think the perfect example of this is Aaron Pico. Everyone just was completely down Aaron Pico, and now he's one of the best. He's still one of the best prospects in Bellator. So it's like, let's not get completely down James Gallagher. But when you have that brash style, and I think a lot of fans, my perception is they don't believe that there's a lot of authenticity to the trash talking that James Gallagher may believe that it's a persona for him. I mean, as I'm watching James Gallagher fight, I thought I love the way he came out, really pushed the pace. I love those calf kicks he kept throwing out there. Ricky really wasn't trying to block him. But when you watch James fight, you can see clear deficiencies in his defensive game.
Yeah, and I think maybe the thing with James Gallagher, again, is the brash style, is walking in that cage and getting in the face of Ricky Bandejas. I mean, you're just begging for people not to have sympathy for you when you get embarrassed. And that's what happened there for James Gallagher, man. That was a rough, rough loss to Ricky Bandejas. And we knew heading into it how talented Ricky Bandejas was. And the different feeling I have, though, is despite thinking that James Gallagher is still talented, I think the difference between him and Aaron Pico is that it would shock me if Aaron Pico doesn't end up being a top 15 fighter in his weight class, top 10 fighter in his weight class. It wouldn't shock me if James Gallagher doesn't get there. I think there are enough vulnerabilities in his game that if he doesn't necessarily evolve from prospect to a solid top fighter, that wouldn't be the biggest shock. I think James Gallagher is much more vulnerable to maybe struggling long-term than Aaron Pico. He's still incredibly talented. He took on a tough opponent, and we certainly know where he likes to fight, and that's not where it played out against Ricky Bandejas. But again, just an embarrassing outing for James Gallagher, because this is a guy who puts himself in a position to get embarrassed because of how much trash he talks. And again, the second he got in that cage and got in Ricky's face, I mean, who was rooting for James Gallagher at that point? And at that point, you just become a meme, right? You just splice the two videos together of that and then the knockout loss.
I saw somebody put together a tweet that basically said this didn't age long, and it was literally, you know, Gallagher up in Ricky's face, and then of course Ricky goes all Shawn Michaels on him with a little sweet chin music there. Poor James Gallagher, because that is going to be on the Bellator highlight reel for the rest of his career.
Absolutely. That was brutal. That was a sick kick too. I mean, it wasn't your brutal knockout, right? It was beautiful. It was artistic, and it was a bit delayed to the reaction. So that was a great win for Ricky for Ricky. And again, I thought this was kind of one of those fights you look at and like, man, James Gallagher gets a win, he might be able to talk himself into a title shot at 135. And now you look at that bantamweight division, man, up and down that roster, and you look at Darian Caldwell coming off his win over Noah Lahat. And then I start to think, damn, his next fight might be at featherweight again. He might not defend that bantamweight title next. That might be an attempt at the featherweight championship.
Yeah, you know, I got this asked this question on social media from Gus Congo. He says, who you have at top five at 135 in Bellator, which was kind of went to the Bellator, roster. And let's see if you agree with what I had to say. Of course, number one, obviously Darian Caldwell, the champion. Number two, I put Michael McDonald. Three, Eduardo Dantas. Then this became who's four and five. And I went Ricky Bandejas at number four and Dominic Mazzada at number five.
And I guess that's Leandro Eagles for sure. After Aaron Pico's fight, is a 145er, right? Or is that something that is subject to change?
I think that's subject to change, and to see what happens with him. I mean, it probably depends on what happens in his next fight.
I think he's the one guy you look at and maybe has the talent level to get there. But yeah, I mean, what can you say, man? Those guys two and three, they aren't in line for a title shot, and there's a big drop off. I mean, we're looking at a situation where the next guy to challenge for the bantamweight title might just be Ricky Bandejas, which is not something I was expecting to say. But this division is shallow as hell.
Oh yeah, I mean it's you know, Bellator's got to add talent, and you know, speaking of Michael McDonald, he put this post up on his Facebook account this week where he said, quote, "My friends, I have some news about my hand. Unfortunately, the first attempt to fix my hand wasn't as successful as we had hoped. We are going to move on with surgery after all. Not only did I shatter my bone in my hand, but I also crushed it. I lost a quarter off my knuckle and pointer finger length, in which significantly misaligns and deforms my fist, which will be a huge danger for me to continue punching. We are going to try to fuse my hand bones together and also extend it back to the original length, along with adding a surgical steel plate for reinforcement. It's crazy to say, but this could possibly still be only a portion of my recovery. The last bone fusion I had on my right hand was a two-surgery process, one to add a steel plate and fuse the bone along with extracting bone marrow from another part of my body, and yet another surgery a month afterward to remove the steel plate and screws from my hand since they were so close to the wrist. My surgery is scheduled for August 30th in Las Vegas with the genius Dr. James Vahai. Praise God, I have a wonderful wife who will take care of me during these crazy times. I couldn't imagine if we had a newborn children and we had to deal with this craziness. If you have a calendar and take practice in praying for people in need, please feel to add it to your calendar on the 30th to pray for my health in surgery, my doctor's steady hand, my wife's caretaking, and my body's acceptance of the surgery. Thanks, guys. I'll keep you updated as time goes on." When I first read that and saw that tweet, Daniel, my initial thought was, I don't know if we ever see Michael McDonald fight again.
Yeah, the way he describes his hand is disgusting. Like, that sucks. And that's awful. And that was my same thought process, too. I think we will. I think this is a guy who clearly is going to – I think once this is all healed, I think knowing the last time we saw him with that victory over Eduardo Dantas, when he does get back in a position to fight again, he's going to go after it. I mean, he's going to recover so he can use his hand properly first and foremost. And we do know Michael McDonald is a guy who at times doesn't necessarily – I mean, has talked about the idea of retirement. And obviously fighting isn't the most important thing in his life, as it shouldn't be. You know, his family or religion, whatever. So I wouldn't be shocked either. It's a bit of a shame because obviously if he was healthy, the discussion of what's next for Darian Caldwell would be a very short discussion. It would end at his name. But again, I wouldn't be certainly shocked. My guess is, though, he does kick ass in this recovery, as hard as it may be, and he does get there. What a well-written message, by the way, by Michael McDonald. Really well-written. Great writer. And yeah, man, I hope he gets back healthy and stuff. But again, this is a Bellator bantamweight division where there just isn't a whole lot for Darian Caldwell.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about just as a fight consumer, when it comes to what I want to see next from Darian Caldwell, to me, it's got to be the winner of Patricio Pitbull and Emmanuel Sanchez.
Same here. I think that's a big fight. And it seems like the move up to featherweight was a smart idea for Darian Caldwell, just because I think he looked around at the landscape and he realized the most interesting fights he could have aren't in the division where he's champion, which is a shame for him. But that's just a logical move, and I think that's what's next for Caldwell. And I'm probably doing Emmanuel Sanchez a disservice but by constantly mentioning Patricio Pitbull. But whoever is champion, I think champion versus champion is the direction Bellator should go in addition to doing plenty of scouting at 135.
The other thing I want to mention about Bellator 204 is Logan Storley, who another dominating performance over AJ, this time getting to win against AJ Matthews, stoppage there in the second round. And it made me think of this. You know, you look at Logan at 170 pounds. Is his ceiling in the Bellator 170 pound division equal to what Ed Ruth is?
That's a tough question. I think equals a fair assessment, because I don't want to live in the world of recency bias here, because the thing is, Logan Storley looked great against AJ Matthews. He really did. I mean, this was outright domination. He controlled where the fight wanted to go. But I don't want to come out here and let's forget about the upside of Ed Ruth. I mean, this is a guy who has looked absolutely tremendous, starting his Bellator career up until his last win at Bellator 201. So I think equal's a fair way to put it. If you were to tell me which of these two I would put my money on for having the better career, I think I would go a slight hat tip to Ed Ruth. But again, Logan Storley is really kicking into shape. This is one of the tougher opponents he's faced, and against AJ Matthews, man, this was all you could ask for. You know, the Tywin Claxton fight was a solid performance for Claxton. It wasn't an A+, but for Logan Storley, it absolutely was, and it's absolutely a guy with immense upside.
Yeah, I mean, it's you look at 170 pounds, man, and you look at the lack of depth at 135, but just an extreme amount of depth that Bellator has at 170 pounds. Of course, their next event is not till September the 21st, which, of course, going to be headlined by AJ McKee taking on John Teixeira. But also last week, we had PFL 6, which was headlined by Ray Cooper getting a knockout win in 18 seconds. Also, Kayla Harrison, she improves to 2-0 with a TKO win over Josette Cotton. And I found it really interesting. There was an article on MMA Fighting this week. Kayla was on Luke Thomas's show on the MMA Hour. You know, she talked about how, you know, she doesn't like weight cutting, which is, you know, talked about that, you know, kind of, you know, what she wants to, the message that she wants to send to young fighters and young girls. And, you know, it made me kind of think of, and, you know, could PFL try to do a women's 155-pound division?
Sure, they could. I mean, you'd call it the Kayla Harrison division, because I just don't know if they're going to be able to develop talent in that division. But I think that's the direction they need to go, and I think they need to go. It's not like if they go 145, that division's going to be stacked either. There just isn't a lot of women at 145 or 155 outside the UFC that have name value at this point in time. So I just think you look at Kayla Harrison, you communicate her where she wants to fight at. If it's 155, it's 155, and you attempt to build that division. It's not going to look great, but Kayla Harrison will. Because, damn, against Josette Cotton, I mean, again, this was another fight where she clearly won each and every round, controlling Cotton, putting her on her back. I mean, this was a classic victory for Kayla Harrison. Not the highlight reel win that you'll throw on a Kayla Harrison highlight reel, but certainly a solid victory. But again, I think the goal has to be looking at fighters that want to fight at Kayla's weight class, preferred weight class, signing them, turning them into somewhat names, and getting the job done there.
And this was a quote from Kayla about not really in a hurry to change weight classes. Quote, first of all, I don't believe in weight cutting. I think it's terrible for your body. I think if you're going to win, you got to win at whatever weight you compete at. And I think it's sending a bad message to young girls and young kids. I don't want anyone, especially my niece or someone, to think that to be thinner is to be better. I just don't believe in that. You're big, you're strong, you're powerful. That's the message that I want to send. But I do realize that if I want to be considered the best in the world, I have to beat the best, and that person is at 145 pounds.
That's interesting, because to me, for Kayla Harrison, that's the end of the story, or that's the peak of the story, right? Putting herself in a position to take on Chris Cyborg. And that could very well be the biggest women's MMA fight we've seen in ages down the line. And I tell you what, Jason, she's passing every test. We had some trepidation over maybe taking someone as experienced like Josette Cotton. And at PFL six here, she passed the test. And again, man, I think the textbook here might be fine at 155, starting to get the diet right and getting down to 145, where it's a healthy weight cut. I like the idea she's going at. But the other thing I'll say is, like, God, she is living in her own little bubble, in that she's like the only fighter that can talk like this, because there is no pressure for her to cut that weight. Because the thing is, if she was, you know, you look at a guy who walks around at 160, he cannot fight at 155 and be successful. I mean, he can attempt to, but it's going to be real damn hard. He has to cut down to 145 or 135. Because the guys in that weight class are at his level, and they're that much bigger. Kayla Harrison has the advantage of fighting in a weight class where there aren't fighters cutting weight to really force her to cut her own weight. So, I mean, those are nice comments in theory, but in practicality, they don't really hold up to the reality of the moment.
I think the tough thing for Kayla is we've seen the UFC struggled to develop a 145-pound division over the last year or so. We've seen the struggle of Bellator to try to develop that 145-pound division over the last, you know, 2 years, 3 years or so. So kind of it makes you wonder how PFL is going to be able to develop that division, especially when you look at the fighters that are already under contract with Invicta. By the way, speaking of that PFL show, you know, we mentioned on last week's podcast that this was a show that had a lot of name value on the preliminary card. In the first fight of the night, Eddie Gordon, another loss. And this is a guy that has now only won one time since defeating Diego Lima at the Ultimate Fighter 19 finale. If you count his exhibition loss to Tom Gallico at the Ultimate Fighter 25, this is a guy who's now 1-6 in his last seven fights.
That is rough. That is absolutely rough. And on the flip side, you have Jake Shields getting that victory. So he's certainly changing things up. I just think the issue here for Eddie Gordon, I think, is I don't know if I want to see him fight in PFL again. I really don't, after this performance and after losing streak. I think this is a guy who has to go back to a non-PFL, non-UFC scene, rework his game, and really figure things out, Jason. And I just want to mention, by the way, you asked me if Ray Cooper was going to look like he did against Jake Shields, and I said no, but I was totally wrong. I was totally wrong. Dude came out, got a win in 18 seconds, and looked damn great. Maybe Ray Cooper is the PFL star that they need. You know,
yeah. You look at Ray Cooper. 11 points to make it into the finals. When you look at the welterweight division, four fighters went 2-0. And basically, and someone else noted this when it comes to the PFL season. Basically, all you got to do is win one fight by decision, you're pretty much into the playoffs.
Is Jake Shields in the playoffs?
Jake Shields is in the playoffs. Yes, he is the number 7 seed. So if they're going to seed this thing 1-8, he would fight the number 2 seed, Joel Zeferino.
Damn, that's awesome. Imagine if Jake Shields somehow wins this whole thing. It could happen. I mean, I'm not betting on it, but it could happen. I mean, he got that win over Herman Torrado. I don't know. I'm rooting for Jake Shields after how poorly he looked. But again, if this dude finds himself matched up with Ray Cooper, it ain't going to end nice. I mean, Ray Cooper III to me is just he's a surprise and a delight.
Yeah, so that is PFL 6. PFL 7 is coming up here next on August the 30th. Once again, that'll be in Atlantic City, just like the last event was. So we'll have more on that event when it does get closer. But right now, we're going to get into the interview portion of this week's edition of the podcast. First up, you're going to hear my conversation with UFC lightweight Alex Hernandez. Had a chance to catch up with him and talk to him about his recent victory over Olivier Aubin Mercier. Also talked about Islam Makhachev wanting to fight him and basically how he's not interested in that fight. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Chito Vera, who's going to tell you who he wants to fight next, which is going to be later on this year. And then the final interview is going to be with Greg Rubello, who recently announced that he is coming out of his short-lived retirement. So here's my conversations with Alex Hernandez, Chito Vera, and Greg Rubello. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, this man's coming off a victory, the last UFC on Fox show. Alex Hernandez got the win over Olivier Aubin Mercier. Alex, as always, I appreciate time. After the fight was over, you weren't happy with your performance. Now that some time has passed, do you still feel the same way?
Yeah, I just had to keep adjusting my perspective. There was a lot of positive things to take from it, and the performance itself, the experience. Terrifying to think that I got 14 more minutes of that octagon than the fight before. And so I'm happy to collect that data. But I was just ultra critical on myself. I don't see myself in the same competitive sphere as Mercier or really most of these fighters. And so to even go to a decision or to even have kind of a fight such as that, I was just disappointed. I underperformed in my own scope, and I came out flat. I let exchanges take place that truthfully should have never been there to take place. And so I was just being real critical of myself. I always am, but there's a lot to take from it that's positive, and beating a specialist at specialty and shutting down a lot of naysayers was a good thing.
have you been able to point to of why you felt you were flat on that night?
I feel like maybe 70% of it had to have been in the warm-up before. I was in the back, and I don't know why. I guess we just felt a little bit of an urgency, but we just got started a little bit earlier than we normally do. And I got done, and I remember saying to my coach, "Damn, we should have started this about 10 minutes later." But it's okay. No, I was so ultra-focused, alert, and tuned into the zone. I had Alvarez's camp in the back. I had another camp in the back. Guess's group, they're all looking at me. And they're looking at me with admiration, like, this kid's about to fucking kill somebody. And I knew it. They knew it. Mercy knew he was about to get slaughtered. Everybody knew it. And I was just in the zone, ready to go. And 20 minutes pass. They say, hey, there's going to actually be a flight delay. We need another five pass. We go out there, and they do the whole the introduction videos, and you know, we each walk out. I mean, it was probably over half an hour before I actually got out there. And by that time, I just started feeling it in my legs a little bit in my scapula, my neck. And I didn't have that same spry spring to my step that I had, you know, half an hour earlier. So I think that might have been a little bit of it. And it wasn't so much of just being like too much adrenaline. It was just kind of, I had a really good focused point of excellence that sort of diminished a bit in time. And I feel like that might have been in large part. We're going through, you know, scrupulously through the details of that week and just making sure anything that we can clean up, we'll clean up.
I mean, it almost kind of sounds like live and learn. And if you're ever put in that situation, you kind of know what to do.
Exactly. Exactly. Getting there again, and maybe for whatever reason, there's time delays, there's issues, or you're feeling a little flat. Now I have that mental whereabouts just to be, you know, it doesn't fucking matter. Just go out there and do what you do. And so, you know, I'm grateful for that experience.
And then I heard you kind of played a little sightseeing after the fight was over in Canada.
Yeah, dude, that was amazing. Man, I've been sleeping on Canada my whole life, and I had no idea what they were hiding from us in the north. We got strange in the wild for a bit. It was beautiful, not spiritually attuned, and did some hiking and traveling through Banff and Jasper. And then I hit the rock bottom I was looking for in Chicago. Just completely blew it out of the water for the last 4 days, and I got right back on the horse, and now we're moving back up. Good to go.
And, you know, one of the things that has come out, and, you know, and I've seen that, you know, Islam Makhachev's, you know, manager, he wants to, for you two guys to fight, and this is just me, and I'm sure you're exact same way. I don't see why that fight makes sense for you.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. I heard it through the grapevine, and I thought, who the fuck cares? I mean, I didn't know who that, just like it, say people are saying the same thing about me, right? Like who the hell is that guy? I don't know who the fuck that guy is. He means nothing to me. I just saw that somebody notified me that he was on the card earlier. I wasn't even paying attention. That brings nothing to the table. I'm trying to get on the radar of the gentleman ahead of me. Everyone behind me has got a sniper on my head saying, here's the new guy. He's got a number. Let's go after him. But they do nothing for me. They bring nothing to the table. There's no upward trajectory in that fight. So, yeah, I'm not entertained by it, and I'm not going to respond to every mouse or the crumb. So, yeah, I figured that I'll fade out like all relevant, you know, callings do.
I mean, I have to imagine that basically, you know, if your manager comes to you with a fight offer, you're hoping the guy has a single number next to his name.
Right. He's got some kind of relevance to the rankings, and certainly on a steep incline in the same direction I'm going. And so it just needs to be something that benefits myself, the company, the numbers on the back end at the bottom line. And then again, I'd like to have those figures also by our names so that we can continue moving forward. I just want to keep moving up.
Have you started even think about, you know, when you would want your next fight to take place?
Oh yeah, I'm aiming for November, but like I said, I'm already getting back into it. My diet's on point. I'm getting back into shape. It's amazing how quickly you can blow out months of hard work in a matter of days. But I'm already back on the weight that I want to be on for training. I'm already back in training shape, and so I'll be ready as soon as October to take a fight. I would like to fight November, unless it's a hell of a calling like that October 6th card, which. I don't find myself squeezing into that thing. That'd be a bit of a far cry to think I'm going to make that. And I don't think I'm not going to pretend that I deserve to be on that card, but shit, if they want to give me the call, I'll answer like I do anything else. But, yeah, I'm aiming for November, and I'm prepared for that.
October 6th was the date that I had in mind. I was thinking because, I mean, obviously...
Yeah, you know, I love for it, man. You give me that kind of confidence. I appreciate that, I do.
Well, what I'm saying is more of, for you, in terms of, you know, branding who you are as a fighter, I mean, that's the biggest platform of the year. I mean, look, there's probably, you know, 500 fighters who want to be on that card. But I mean, it's got to be the card that, I mean, I would think that the UFC, that would be, you know, that would be a card that maybe they want to put you on.
And so that's kind of been my thing, and a little bit the dilemma with the UFC is, you know, help me build my platform. I swear to God, I'm your next star. I'll be that guy. But help me build that platform. Put me in front of the lights. Give me those stages to step onto, and I'll show out. I do. I answered that call on 8-day notice when no one else did, and I showed out, and I'll do it again. So I'm here ready and able whenever I need to be called. And so October 6th is that'd be a dream. But there's also seniority to this, and I respect the fact that there's, you know, top five animals that are calling that be on that card before me and a number of others. But at the end of the day, again, you got to invest in your stars. And so it would be nice for them to put me on the platform.
Like, I mean, in terms of, you know, building your brand, I mean, and obviously a majority of that is what you do inside competition, but is there something about you would want the fans to know about just who you are outside of being an MMA fighter?
I'm just real. And if you want to know more, you're welcome to follow me at The Great 155, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all over the world. Tune in, and you can find out as much as you need to about me. But I just try to be a genuine man of my word, and I deliver on those words every time I step in the octagon.
Now, do you got a preferred social media platform?
Instagram, truthfully. People always ask me about Twitter and shit. I try to keep my head out of social media and things as much as possible. It's just it can be a negative realm to dwell in, and I try to keep my mind full of positive thoughts and elevated. And so I might sprinkle a little something on Twitter here and there, but I never stick around for the responses or to see anything. But I am very active on Instagram. And so, yeah, if you want to follow me there or reach out or whatever else, that's the forum to do it.
I'm shocked by the things fans will say to fighters.
Oh, dude, so people are so bold behind the screen. It's crazy. It was funny, too. I thought about that whenever I was walking out in Canada, right? And so many friendly Canadians in the prelude to that fight. And I was like, oh, that's going to be a breeze. Here I was thinking I'd probably catch some booze or whatever. It sounds like we're going to have a pretty non-biased crowd. Fuck all that noise, dude. I went out there. Half the crowd was pretty cool. The other half was just vulgar and violent. And at the same time, I was kind of like, you know, good on you for showing some testosterone, Canada. So good on you. But I walked out and, you know, there were guys that were just blatantly, I'm standing there about to go out for the intro music. And they're just like, fuck, you get the fuck out of Canada. You're not Canadian, just ripping. And I'm like, dude, you are so brave, 15 feet up in the air behind those bleacher stands. People just get this false bravado and confidence. It's crazy. But, and it comes from zero merit. So it is what it is. But that's why I keep my head out of those, you know, out of those forums and out of that, just that tunnel of negativity. It's just people speaking from absolutely no experience. And it's just passion without any results or effect. You know, and so they can frivolously say whatever they want. And some people let that get in their head and they buy into it. I just don't have time for it. Again, you can't give every mouth a crumb.
Yeah, I remember one time Bobby Lashley was telling me where, you know, this fan was just, you know, just railing him on social media. And he looked at the guy's profile. He's like, man, this guy looks familiar. And that guy had taken a picture of Bobby Lashley like the day before in an airport. And he's just like, no. and he called it, and he's like, he goes, they're not keyboard warriors, they're couch warriors. He goes, because they're sitting on their couch, you know, F-bombing you, and, you know, basically calling you every name in the book.
Yeah, that's why I made that out from the last one. You know, you get every sofa scrub in the world who's got an opinion. It's like anything else. It's like, what validates that opinion? What even gives you, like, the spine to stand on that opinion? And so, yeah, you just got to fucking in one ear out the other. Just don't even open the gate to it. I avoid it altogether. Again, I try to put myself on a plateau above it. So
But we do look forward to seeing whether it's maybe October or November when you get back into the cage. Alex, man, as always, I appreciate time. And, of course, once again, let everyone know where they can follow you out on the various social media channels.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Hey, check me out on the Great 155 Ohana Academy, Friday and Strength and Conditioning. Appreciate it.
I am now joined by a man who's coming off a win at UFC 227, Chito Vera. Chito Vera, really appreciate the time. Congratulations on the victory. One of the things that when you were talking to the media after the fight, you were talking about, you know, the pressure you felt heading into that fight because of what happened in the last two fights. But is that pressure any different than the pressure you just feel anytime you step into inside competition?
Well, you know, it's almost the same. At the end of the day, pressure is pressure, good or the bad one. I just think when the cage is locked, it's just about, you know, fight and just going there and try to be the best man that night. You know, it really, pressure don't bother me. I just think pressure is good. You know, pressure will make you fight better, will make you fight more smart. And at the end of the day, fighting is about pressure. You know, you're locking the cage, you're fighting some guys, so. I was starting to get a win, and I'm glad I get it, and in a spectacular fashion, you know. Big body shot twice, and then the guy fell off, and then finished it with a couple hammer fists.
As you had visualized how you thought that fight was going to go down, was that kind of the ending sequence that you kind of felt, you know, that was going to be there?
Well, I said previously, I have to put this guy out, you know. That was a step back in competition. But anyways, I keep it real. You know, everybody can punch. Everybody can hurt at that point in the cage. So I was really honest with myself, but I was also honest with this is a step back. So I have to finish this guy to make an statement. You know, like you cannot go the distance with those guys. You cannot let them be confident in there. You have to go in there, set the game plan, and just fuck them up. I said, like, I'm not being cocky, I'm being confident. I will fuck this guy up, and I'm pretty sure that's what I did.
You know, and of course, it's your second TKO win in the UFC. Is this one a more memorable stoppage victory than the TKO win over Brad Pickett?
I just think a win is a win, you know. I really don't care if the guy in front of me is ranked or is just this guy, a guy with one fight in the UFC. At the end of the day, the fans and the UFC don't, they care about who you beat. You know, if you beat number one, you obviously fight for the title. But a win is a win, and I take the win. You know, the Brad Pickett fight is already in the past. I don't live off what happened before. The guy's done. The guy retired. So I just beat a veteran right there. It's not like I just beat a ranked guy. The guy is tough, but let's be honest. I beat an old guy. So I respect him. I know we have gone in a little bit of beef with his little son, Natalie Wood, but I'm not trying to focus on what happened in the past. It was a great win. I'm glad I knocked him out. I get 50 years of his head, but I'm not a guy who lives on what happened before. I'm focused on what was next for me. This fight was good. I beat the guy. I'm glad I did it in the big stage, UFC 227, but besides that, I'm just focusing on recovering my couple of injuries, but I should be ready to go soon.
Whether you win or lose a fight, is it one of those situations that, you know, next day or the day after you watch the fight, you see what you did good, you see what you did bad, and you just close that chapter and you just completely move on?
Yep, I watch the fight, I see what I would like to do more, what I would like to don't do it anymore, and most likely I watch the fight like once or twice, a couple days after the fight, as soon as I already forget what happened. And then after that, that's it. I'm not living off a win. I will live off my next win, because sometimes people get they get stuck on, oh, yo, I beat this guy, I beat that guy. And those things are not true, because if I lose my next fight, everybody's going to see that one. So for me, it's all about the next one. I'm always looking forward. I never look behind my shoulders, because you don't need that. That's why when I get the fight against Jimmy Rivera, he was talking about, oh, the reason I don't fight this guy is because I beat this guy, that guy. I'm like, nobody cares what you did in the past. And look what happened. He got KO last fight. Nobody's thinking about who he beat before. The only fight people is going to remember is the one behind you, and he get knocked out last fight. Nobody cares who he beat before. So I'm just putting an example. I really don't care about that little fucker anymore.
You mentioned about, it was a step down for you in this fight. But my understanding is you're looking for that step up, and you have a particular guy in mind.
Yeah, I think I want to fight in the South American car. People say he's probably going to be in Argentina. That would be amazing. So I make numbers, you know. I'm like, okay, Frankie Sainz already fought in Chile. So it makes perfect sense because the UFC already brought him over there. So, and he beat a Mexican guy. So I'm like, well, that's why I want to fight him. I got nothing against him. The guy is fighting good. The guy is strong. I'm not trying to pick fights, but I'm trying to make fights that make sense for the UFC, and it's easier to make. Why? Because he already fought there. He won. The fans know him. And South America is like, they have big fan base over there, but it's not like they know every single fighter in the UFC. So I think that fight makes sense for now. I'm like, put me in Argentina against the guy.
You mentioned about your recovering. I mean, you know, how far away do you think you are from kind of being, you know, full go inside the training room?
Well, Argentina is in November. I think anything between October and November, I will be ready to go. I'm not using my legs. I'm not sparring yet, but I'm swimming. I'm doing yoga. I'm eating healthy. So if I'm doing those things, if my cardio keep going, I could fight without training. I did that before. So it's not like I need to spar or do a lot of jiu-jitsu for fight. If I can, you know, see some technique and keep my cardio on point, I'm ready to go. I won't forget how to fight. I know how to fight.
I know you talked about, training with TJ and his team, and also training at Yokohama, where you've been for a long time, and you credited your new wrestling coach. Kind of what did he bring to you? Was it something early on in working with him that he said to you that just immediately clicked?
Well, after I lost two fights in a row, I was thinking on my own, like, I got to figure it out something. Like, there's no way I just lose because it's my fault. Like, no way. Like, something could be wrong. Like, something wasn't missing. Something wasn't doing right. So I started thinking, like, what I should figure it out. Like, okay, I feel I'm a jiu-jitsu guy. I come from jiu-jitsu. So, you know what? I need to step my jiu-jitsu up. I started going to AOA with the Mendes Bros. That's probably the best gym in the world, in my opinion. I know. There's really a good place to go, but that was close to me, and those guys are world-class. So I started working there. I was feeling my wrestling was being an issue. So I went to the big fish right away. I contacted Daru Christian. He's a former U.S. Olympic wrestling guy. He beat a lot of guys. He have been in a lot of title challenges in the UFC. He's not a head coach, but he's a wrestling coach of the guys who won titles before. So I'm like, well, I contact him. Then he contact TJ because he trained him, and he asked TJ like if it was good to me to go there. TJ was cool. He accepted. So we started working twice a week, three times a week, and I was doing what I was doing in Oyama, but I add stuff to my preparation. You know, since I was coming off two losses, as they say, I was like, well, I need to figure stuff out. I need to step up. I need to see what I'm missing. And everything came out good in this fight. So I will keep doing what I'm doing. I will keep at Oyama, but I will keep with my changes. I will keep working on them. And this is a crazy sport. This is a sport like you have to be obviously a good training partner to help your teammates. But it's also a sport like when you're fighting alone, and you need to find what's best for you.
And we know how much you've talked about your family in the past. Right now, is that pretty much you're just kind of taking advantage of this downtime, just being able to do as much as you can with your family?
Yeah. I always try to do something. You know, it's hard for me. Like, it's not like I just can go like, oh, I will fly to Arizona and train with this boxing coach. I have a family, so I got to figure it out how to work everything close to home. But yeah, I try to spend time with my kids. It's hard because they don't see me too much, but it's not because I'm doing dumb shit. I'm working my ass off, and they will understand someday. They will grow up and things like that. But I'm doing everything with my hands to just be ready for fight and just get as better as I can.
And we look forward to seeing potentially whether maybe it's October, November to see your return back inside the UFC Octagon. As always, I appreciate time. Of course, let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
They can find me at Chito Vera UFC on Twitter and Instagram, and my Facebook fan page is Chito Vera. And I just hope to fight in Argentina, put in a show for the South American fans, and I hope I get Frankie fans, but that's it.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man who kind of threw a little curveball for us back there at the last CES show, Greg Rebello. Greg, as always, man, I appreciate the time. Of course, it was June 27th. You go on social media, you say, I'm calling it a career, and then I'm watching the CES show, and you're like, no, man, I'm coming back, which once again just proves my point. I should never believe when a fighter says they're retired.
This is true. I should have just stayed off social media and gave it a couple of days before I talked about it. But, you know, I don't know. It was kind of one of those things. It was like real frustrating in Vegas. And then when I came back home, I kind of sat and thought about it. And I didn't want to end on that kind of a note, you know. So that was kind of the decision. And CES and Pat Miletich hit me up, and they were all kind of like, you know, you should go out on a win and go out on a good note. You know, you've had a long career, and you don't want to go out like that. So I kind of agree with him, and we'll see what happens.
I mean, is this one more fight, or is it kind of let's have one more fight, and then is it an evaluation after every fight?
Pretty much. Yeah, because I don't want to become – my friends have been calling me Brett Favre for the last 6 months, so I don't want to –
So, I mean, was it one of those things just a couple of days after that, after you kind of, you know, made that public statement, it's like, nah, man, I'm doing this. And was it, I mean, obviously I know you're in the gym training guys, but I mean, was the mindset already, okay, time to get ready for a fight?
I never stopped training. You know, as soon as I got back that week, I started working with the guys that I had, fights coming up. So, you know, it was more like, you know, I just don't want to go out on that note, you know, like Chael Sonnen, he's the guy who always says that I took that from his podcast. He said that, you know, most guys go out on their back looking up at the ring lights, and I don't want to do that, you know.
I mean, and that the contender series fight, was there ever a point with the two fighters falling out that you're like, maybe this just isn't meant to be, and maybe I shouldn't fight on this card?
100%. You know, I definitely said that. I even said that to my manager. I'm like, you know what, like I hate doing this. Like, I hate when opponents drop out because it messes with your head a lot. And not only that, as I went from fighting a guy that's my height to a guy that was 6'5". I mean, there's no excuse. Like, a fight's a fight. You know what I mean? And I got caught, and I was fine. And I'm better than that kid. I know that I'm better than that kid. But it is what it is. You know, I guess it just wasn't meant to be. You know, I can't win a fight in Vegas, dude. Like, it's just, I don't know what it is out there. I think a lot of it is – the contender series is strange, man. Like, when you go out there, there's no crowd, there's no noise. Like, I feed off that. I feed off the energy, and I need that. You know what I mean? So it's definitely different, you know?
Is it tough, like, warming up for that fight? You know, just in the back when, I mean, I've talked to guys, they said, hey, it just feels like a gym fight.
Yeah, it's weird. It feels like sparring. It really does. I mean, it feels like you're getting ready to spar somebody you don't know. And then when you walk out, I mean, you're only allowed to have four people there. So there's, like, four people standing up clapping. So it's like, you kind of walking out, and it feels like I might as well just put my backpack on and walk into the gym and fight. Like, it's, you know, like I said, when I fight here, I have a lot of fans. It's really loud. Like, and I love that. You know what I mean? I like to put on a show for fans. So it's kind of like, yeah, obviously Dana White's there, but it's just, it's very strange. It's unlike any experience that I've ever had. And I fought there twice, and it didn't go well either, both times, but it's strange for me anyway. You know what I mean? Obviously, I think some guys don't like crowds and they don't fight well in front of crowds. So maybe that's better for them. But for me, you know, it definitely, I need crowds. I need, like, a, you know, something to amp me up.
How many times do you go back and watch that fight?
Once. And yeah, it was just, you know, crazy, man. I just never thought I would get caught with something stupid like that. He threw, like, a spinning back kick, hit me with it, but it didn't hurt. Like, you know, he was like a powerful puncher, and then he threw the spinning back fist, and I just didn't see it coming. But I was fine. Like, I wasn't, you know, I kind of yelled at Herb after the fight, and I'm like, man, like, you know, give me a chance. Like, I got 30 fights. Like, I'm, you know, I was sitting up on my butt and I was against the fence, and I knew what was going on. Like, I knew that I got hit with that shot, and I was fine. But it is what it is, man. Everything happens for a reason. I'm not gonna cry about it, but it was tough, man. It was tough with the whole experience with changing opponents every few days and for him, I think it was easier. I know if when I've taken flights on short notice, it's easy. Like, you just go in there. You don't have enough time to give a crap about anything. You just kind of go in there and let it rip, you know. But it is what it is, man.
Did Herb warn you at all, you know, in the back prior to the fight of, hey, you know, I might come in for a quick finish? I mean, was that a warning at all to you?
No. You know what I mean? It's just – you can't really blame him. He's the best ref in the business as far as I'm concerned, you know. So it's kind of like he was standing behind us. And I went down, and he was over on top of me, like hitting me. But I was, you know, posted up on like one of my arms against the fence. And I knew what was going on. You know what I mean? The shot definitely rocked me, but I knew where I was. I knew what was going on. I was fine, you know. But yeah, it is what it is. You know what I mean? Because it's kind of like a 50-50 thing. Like maybe he could have postured back up and hit me with an elbow and knocked me clean out, you know, or maybe I would have came back and got up and won the fight. Like, who knows? You don't really know, you know.
Yeah, I was talking to another referee, and he was telling me, he's like, he goes, if you tell me I can ref a heavyweight fight over a lightweight fight, he goes, I'll do it all day long. He goes, because those fights, you know when they're going to be over as opposed to lightweight. Those guys are moving around quick. But in terms of when you do have that next fight, is there a timetable of when you want it to be?
It'll probably be next year. You know, I have a lot of guys that I'm coaching right now. So, you know, I had, three guys fight on CES last week, and I got a couple more fighting this weekend at Cage Titans down in Plymouth. So, you know, I'm just kind of focused on that. I'm still training, though. I still train every day, you know, twice a day a lot of the time. So, you know, I'm still in the gym and I'm still in shape. So, you know, I'll be ready to go. But it'll probably be in, like, January or February if I was to guess. So,
who are some of the guys you got on the Cage Titans show?
Randy Costa out of Lozon's gym. I've been helping him with his striking a lot. And then we get a couple amateurs from my gym at Triforce, first-timers as amateurs. So yeah, it should be pretty good. And then a couple of people that I cross train with are fighting that night too. Kylie O'Hearn, who's a girl that's, I've known her since she was, you know, 10 years old training in the gym, and she's a beast. She's very good. I think this might be her pro debut coming up, but she's somebody you're going to see. Like, she's somebody that's going to be in the UFC. I can guarantee it. Man.
When you have a fighter having their first amateur fight, is there something you're looking for from them in the back to kind of see they're ready to go?
It's weird, man, because it's like, you know, you don't, no matter what happens in the gym, you don't really know what to expect, because I've seen both sides. I've seen guys look like animals in the gym, and then they get out there and they're kind of like, wow, a deer in headlights. Then I've seen the opposite, where guys are okay in the gym and then they get into the ring and it's just, you know, they just let it all go, you know. So it's, I'm not really sure what to expect, you know, with the kid that I got going, this kid Diego. He's a heavyweight, he's a big guy, he's one of my training partners as well, and he's very talented, he's skilled, and he's been at it for a while. But like you said, when the lights go on and it's time to go, it's, you know, that's kind of where you separate the men from the boys. So,
I know you've talked about that in the past, how a lot of your sparring partners are amateurs. And I know a lot of people would kind of say, man, that's got to be a crazy thought. Why would you have amateurs? But I mean, is it just one of those things you got to, just because you know how hungry they are, that they're just going to go balls the wall at you?
Yeah. And that's the thing too, that they know that I have 30 pro fights, over 30. And when I spar with them, I know that they're trying to like, probably impress me or trying to like prove a point that they can hang, you know. So it brings out the best in them, that's for sure, you know. Because a lot of times when I go with other guys that have 30 fights like I do, it kind of turns into just like a light sparring match, more like a technical match, which is fine. But sometimes you need that guy that comes out there and tries to take your head off them.
Mentioning, you know, early on 2019, when you're looking to fight, is there anyone that's even remotely on your radar at this point?
I have no idea. I haven't even really thought about it. You know, like I came home and I didn't even think about fighting. And I still, obviously, I know that it's probably going to happen again, but I've not thought about who or what or really when, to be honest with you. I've just been kind of coaching these guys and you know, helping them get ready for fights. And that's pretty much it, you know.
So we do look forward to seeing when that fight may take place. And we'll see you cage side at Cage Titans and the CES show.
Sure. You know it. I'll be there. I got a lot of guys coming up, man. There's, you know, CES has picked up a lot of shows. They have a show this Friday night in Philadelphia too, as well. And so they're traveling a lot, and they get a lot more shows this year. So you're going to expect to see a lot more guys getting opportunities in CES. So it's pretty good, man. Pretty sweet.
And Daniel, there was my conversation with Alex Hernandez, Chito Vera, and Greg Rebello. As I noted in the interview with Alex Hernandez, the fight against Islam Makhachev makes literally zero sense for Alex Hernandez. If you're him, you want a guy really that's going to be in that top 10. We'll see if Chito Vera does get that fight against Frankie Saenz, looking to have that matchup down in South America in November. And of course, Greg Rebello, once again, even joked with him at the beginning of that interview, just proving our reasoning of why you should never believe a fighter when he announces retirement.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Jason. It is, we need to sell a shirt that just has the different rules in MMA, and one of them is, dude says he's retired, he's not.
Yeah, it just happens more times, than not. By the way, I saw speaker retirement. I saw Evan Dunham's talk about he's going to retire after his next fight. I don't know how many people necessarily believe them, just based on history. But speaking of the UFC, we've got UFC Lincoln, which I believe is UFC Fight Night 135. I just call it UFC Lincoln. It's at the point now I just can't even keep up with the numbers on these events. But a nice little fight night card on Saturday night. Obviously Gaethje Vick really sticks out. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I mean, this is really going to tell you where James Vick is. Where is he stack up as a top 10 lightweight? I like that matchup between Courtney Casey and Angela Hill. How about we have got a flyweight matchup on the main card that's not a title fight?
All it took was a guy who used to challenge for the title and a weak card. I mean, look, John Moraga isn't marquee star, but by God, we finally have one, man. And he's taking on a guy in Davison Figueredo. I think I nailed it, Jason.
nailed it.
He's a guy who, if you're the UFC at flyweight, that's a nice little guy you want to put on TV, because in all likelihood, I think he's going to win this fight, and I think he's got a world of potential. So I think Davison is the fighter, if you're the UFC at flyweight, one of those guys you want to expose to an audience. But again, it's kind of cheap because we're talking about an FS1 card. Sure, the other prelims will be on FS2, but it's still FS1. I want these guys on pay-per-view. I want these guys on Fox. Let's market this division. But again, we got that. We got Woman Strawweight on TV. Jake Ellenberger on TV. Kraus and Warley Alves should be a great fight, Jason. You know, one fighter kind of under the radar to me is Joanne Calderwood. A fighter we haven't seen since July 2017, but a fighter with just immense potential when the UFC decided to bring the women's strawweight division to the UFC. And a fighter who I think with time off, if she's recovered correctly and gone back to her old style, could come out like gangbusters and be a real force. But again, she's got to get through some of the issues she's had in her more recent fights to do so. And of course, the fight between Michael Johnson and Andre Feely, I'm looking forward to that.
I was kind of surprised to see that Hani Yahya versus Luke Sanders is kicking off this card on UFC Fight Pass. I think that's a quality matchup at 135 pounds. Drew Dober, John Tuck, of course, had John Tuck on the podcast last week. Also on last week's podcast, had Eric Anders. And have you seen the betting odds on this fight?
I have. We're talking about Eric Anders as a huge, huge favorite, are we not?
Yes. Yeah, so I just, bestfightodds.com is the best place to go to see these odds. And if you one of the things when you click on the odds, you can see the betting history. So as we record this podcast here on late Tuesday evening, he is currently a -1,000 favorite. So that's a 10-1 favorite. Daniel, he opened up at -280. So what's that tell you about the betting public? They love those American Anders, which, by the way, on Wednesday night of this week, it's going to be on, I want to say it's FS1, maybe it's FS2, there where Eric Anders went back to Tuscaloosa and basically sits down with Coach Nick Saban. So I'm going to be DVRing that because that's very interesting to me.
Yeah, man, look, that's crazy to lose to Lyoto Machida, present-day Lyoto Machida, and be a 1,000 favorite in a UFC fight. Not as crazy as – I'm glad you talked about it. How is Hani Yahya not on TV? This guy, he's 6-1 in his last 7 fights. I don't get it. It's nuts. It's stupid. Blasphemy.
Yeah, it's just kind of, just very shocking that to see that fight. But hey, if you're a UFC Fight Pass subscriber, I will tell you this. I took advantage of that deal they offered for the Contender Series, And, you know, Daniel, you know, you always say you just kind of forget to cancel. That's what I did. So I got charged under 10 bucks.
Yeah, you are just, you are a big UFC Fight Pass deal guy. I mean, since the time we've recorded this podcast. I
think you have to. You have to take advantage of those deals. When they put them out there, you got to take advantage of them.
No, you're not wrong, man. You're not wrong. But look who's being taken advantage of now.
Yeah, I just I think I was like a day late. I was like, well, I guess they got my 10 bucks for this month. So, yeah, it's you know, but you know, I know you mentioned to me before we started recording about Mickey Gall, how he's a favorite in this fight on the betting lines, -335, George Sullivan +275 was reading an article earlier today about Mickey Gall, about how, you know, he credited Randy Brown for realizing that he needed to get out of his comfort zone, and has been training out in California with Joe Schilling at the Muscle Farm place in California. You know, in terms of him being that big of a favorite, not surprising.
It's not surprising, but I just don't know if that's the right move there. I think George Sullivan's going to win this fight, and look, George Sullivan has not looked great lately. I lost three of his last four, but I still think I was really impressed with him when he made his debut like 4 years ago against Mike Rose. I really thought he was real well-rounded, and especially looking against Mickey Gall, I think on the feet he could present some trouble there for Mickey. So I just felt like Gall maybe has really benefited from being put in real high-profile fights to start his career. And that may have given him a little too much value in the betting public, but maybe I'm wrong. And maybe he's going to come out here and run through George Sullivan.
Let me ask this. Who would you feel more comfortable putting money as an underdog on? Jake Ellenberger +400 or James Krause +325?
Man, that's a good question. I'm going to have to go with James Krause for sure. Because the thing with Jake Ellenberger is, like, this guy has been in I need to retire stage for like three straight fights, and against Ben Saunders, I mean, it was bad. It was really bad. Whereas with James Krause, he's taking on a tough fighter in Worley Alves, but James Krause is still a guy who's won four consecutive fights, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little surprised by the Krause Alves line. I mean, James Krause, I've always, you know, enjoyed watching him fight. You know, Jake Ellenberger, I think at this fight, I think the reason he's on this card is because it's in Lincoln, Nebraska. Otherwise, I don't think he probably would have another UFC fight just based on the run he has been on. But yeah, it's hopefully that's not kind of a, you know, quote unquote sad ending. Courtney Casey, Angela Hill, I talked about last week how much I like this fight. I just think this is going to be kind of, you know, two ladies going in and pretty much having a phone booth fight. I think that's what that's going to be. You know, Michael Johnson, Andre Feely. You know, with Michael Johnson, for those who have not seen, you know, he's roommates with Desmond Green down in South Florida. You know, thoughts and prayers go out to Desmond, and involved in a car accident this week. I know MMA Junkie has a story up that kind of profiles some of the issues that he's had, legally speaking, in terms of, I think he'd have, you know, proof of insurance, and maybe he was driving on a suspended license, but it was a crash there on Saturday morning down in Boca Raton area. So you kind of wonder where Michael Johnson's head is potentially going to be at, you know, taking on Andre Feely. Maybe when he steps in there, he's just not, you know, it's all good about the fight game. But I do like that matchup between Johnson and Feely. But I mean, you mentioned it, the reason you're going to the television set on Saturday night is because of Justin Gaethje.
100%. And I think it's going to be maybe the biggest challenge for Justin Gaethje when it comes to putting on a fight of the night. Just because James Vick, out of all of his opponents, is a guy who's going to use his reach to create space, take things slow. And that may present problems for winning the fight of the night. Maybe that's a buy or sell segment. Is Justin Gaethje going to be fight of the night? Because James Vick may present some trouble there. I think Gaethje will get it, Jason. But again, he's a point of view in television. But this fight to me is more about James Vick, because I don't know if our opinion of Justin Gaethje will change that much, win or lose. I really don't think it will. I do think for James Vick, there is much more on the line in terms of how we perceive him as a top fighter.
No, I totally agree with you. I mean, I think, and I know, you know, James has basically talked about this, is you have to, you know, you've got to survive that 8-9 minutes of flurry that you're going to get from Justin Gaethje. Now, you know, you mentioned about the reach advantage that James Vick is going to have in this. It's a 6-inch reach advantage, you know, and we know that, you know, one of the big assets that Justin Gaethje does have with his style is those leg kicks. And I don't think that just because of things not going Justin Gaethje's way, you know, in his last two fights, I don't think we're going to see magically that he's all of a sudden going to change his fighting style. I think that's, you know, he is who he is. And that's why fans love him, you know, because, you know, this is, yes, this is sports, but this is entertainment. We want to go, you know, we want to turn on that television and we want to be entertained. And when it comes to, you know, Justin Gaethje, you know, this guy's going to entertain. You know, I did see that he is a slight underdog in this fight, or at plus 130. James Vick is at minus 150. I mean, I like Justin Gaethje in this spot.
Yeah, I think I do too. I when this fight was originally announced, I began to kind of lean toward James Vick. I felt like maybe the reach advantage would be a bit too much. I think he would be real smart. But the more I think about it, I think the apprehension may end up costing him here. I think Justin Gaethje is going to take some real chances, Jason. He's going to get inside at some point, and he's going to put James Vick down and get the victory.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to it. I've got a weekend off, Daniel, so I think I can stay up on Saturday night till about you know, 1:30, because you know that fight's not starting until at least 1 a.m. Eastern time.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, we're talking about FS1 pacing, Jason. We're talking about this thing is less than 12 hours.
I almost feel like I should just, like, tune in, like, at 11 o'clock, then start watching the main card at that point. Then by the time I catch up, the main event will be starting.
I think that is absolutely the ideal plan. I mean, you gotta life hack these cards, Jason, because if not, you're looking at spending half of your year on the couch watching UFC.
Yeah, it's but you know, it should be a nice little UFC card. You know, it should be mentioned last week the tickets for UFC 229, Khabib versus Conor, went on sale, and they did not last long. I think basically just the premium tickets are still available, but everything else in that building is sold out. And you brought this question up; I thought it was a great question. You know, with Conor Khabib clearly being the hottest ticket in MMA, if we could have one ticket to go to any MMA event in history, which one would it be? Mine is kind of simple, and it was UFC 148, Anderson Silva versus Chael Sonnen 2.
Ooh, that is absolutely a great one, Jason. I respect that one. My pick is not UFC, but if I was going to pick a UFC one, I would go with McGregor versus Diego Brandão. I mean, look, I'm not joking. I'll tell you why, Jason. It really is not as important as Silva and Sonnen too, but if I was going to be in attendance to be in Dublin, Ireland,
okay,
at night, I mean, didn't Kevin Ioli like go to it and say it was the best UFC event ever that week? I mean, that like, he wrote an article, he got some crap for it. Maybe he's not wrong. Drinking with Irish people, getting drunk as hell in the crowd, and McGregor winning in the main event? I'm all in on that, but that's not my pick. My pick is 2005. I wanted to go to Japan. I wanted to go to a Pride show. So I chose what I think is the best Pride show ever, Pride FC Bushido 9. You got two different tournaments, quarterfinals and semis. You got Dan Henderson destroying Akihiro Gono, Takanori Gomi going crazy, Sakurai's on the card. Just a phenomenally entertaining event. I mean, I'm getting like 15 fights. I'm going Pride Bushido 9 in 2005.
Yeah, Japan was one of the things, yeah, that I thought of as one event. I mean, I like what you're kind of saying of Conor fighting double. Yeah, that definitely would be up there. But I just remember UFC 148. I mean, I just remember when they did the weigh-ins and they filled an entire arena up. It was just crazy. So that would definitely be it for me. Of course, we're going to wrap up this week's edition of the podcast by doing our weekly buy-sell segment. We've got four items that we're going to speak about here. And Daniel, up first is this one. With the amount of MMA fighters turning to bare-knuckle boxing, buy or sell, bare-knuckle boxing will be aired on a basic cable television station in the next 12 months.
I think the smart move is to buy it, but I'll sell it. I think bare knuckle boxing will primarily be a pay-per-view property.
Yeah, I'm selling it as well, just because I think it's going to be a tough sell in a lot of television executives, just based on kind of how the first event went. By the way, speaking of bare knuckle boxing, you know, it was recently announced that Sean Merriman is going to be fighting in one of the leagues, and you may have seen my interview I had with Tyler King, you know, who's fought a Northeast fighter who actually was a teammate at one time with Sean Merriman with the Chargers. He's trying to get that fight. Did an interview where basically he signed his part of the contract, but Sean hasn't signed his, so we'll see if that fight does take place. But you know, bare knuckle boxing, you know, to me, it's, you know, there's definitely a good amount of MMA fans that like it, but there's also a section of people that just you know, it's just not their thing. Next up, we're speaking of UFC Lincoln, and we're speaking about Jake Ellenberger. Buy or sell? This UFC Lincoln will be Jake Ellenberger's last UFC fight, and Daniel, I'm buying it.
I am too. I thought his last fight should have been his last fight. I thought his last fight before his last fight should have been his last UFC fight. So I'm buying it, and it's safe because he might still fight again, just not in the UFC.
Next up, another buy or sell in UFC Lincoln. Mickey Gall deserves to be a heavy favorite versus George Sullivan.
I'm selling it. I told you, man. I think George Sullivan might just win this fight. And I just think we're overplaying Mickey Gall because he's got in the spotlight here in the cage with Sage Northcutt and CM Punk. How about you? What do you think?
It's a tough one for me. I think by using the term deserve, I think that's why I would sell this one. But I do think he should be the favorite in the fight. And, you know, a lot of that's just based on talking to people who have trained with Mickey and talking about how talented this kid is. I mean, look, you know, he's a guy that many people have said to me, said, look, he was going to get to the UFC at some point. He just obviously took advantage of that opportunity. Our final buy-sell is related to what a lot of people believe is the greatest fighter of all time, John Jones. Buy or sell, John Jones fights at UFC 230, which, of course, is the next Madison Square Garden card for the UFC.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that Chael Sonnen said on his podcast, where he said something along the lines, he thinks it's going to happen. Or maybe he says John Jones thinks it's going to happen in Madison Square Garden on November 3rd, Jason. And look, it's a tough one for me to say because I don't think it's going to happen. I'm going to sell it. But there's just something about how the way this MMA world works, that things work out like this, and he will find himself fighting at UFC 230, but I'm going to sell it. I think we're looking at like a Luke Rockhold, Chris Weidman main event or something, or maybe, I don't know, or maybe another, I don't, I think it might be Rockhold Weidman.
I'm selling this. I'd be shocked if John Jones does not get at least a two-year suspension by USADA. You know, I think that, you know, the earliest we're going to see John Jones inside the UFC octagon is August of 2019, which would, you know, mark a 2-year suspension. I think that if he does not get at least a 2-year suspension, there is going to be a lot of fighters who have gotten 2-year suspensions that are going to be crying foul.
I think Tom Lawler would be pretty upset.
Yeah, Tom Lawler was one of the names that immediately came to my mind. I think there's so many other fighters that you can say it comes exactly to their mind, but I would be shocked if John Jones doesn't get 2 years. And look, and something to note about John Jones is no matter how long that suspension is going to be, you know, he's got to go in front of the state of California to get his license back because every commission is going to honor that suspension. So he's going to have to still, you know, kind of go out there. And, you know, we saw how that went last time with California with him. You know, I would just be completely shocked if it's less than 2 years, and if it's less than 2 years, I just think that, you know, it's going to send a really bad message to what the USADA program is with the UFC.
Yes, this is the one attention where there are all eyes on it, and it's the one spot where it's most likely that we have seen concessions made to top tier fighters, and if they do so, it's going to be a big indictment on USADA.
Yeah, but we'll have to see. You know, it's, you know, USADA's not talking on that one. I mean, John Jones finally got drug tested I want to say last week was he got drug tested, but you know, a lot of that stuff when I see like people on social media, whether it's a part of Team Jones or maybe someone that's close to Jones, I really just don't pay attention to it. I'm at this point, Dan, where I'm just like, okay, when John's suspension is official, let me know.
Exactly. It does seem like a lot of smoke and mirrors and complete BS.
Yeah, it's just something that I just don't pay attention to. Also, you know, last week we mentioned about how Glover Teixeira was out of the Sao Paulo main event against Jimmy Manoa, and it's going to be Thiago Santos stepping up, moving up to 205 pounds to take on Jimmy Manoa in the main event of that Sao Paulo show. Of course, that'll be a FS1 event on September to the 22nd, which is only a month away. I tell you, Dave, it feels like this year has just flown by.
When does Conor Khabib start? Just let me know when that one starts, and I'll be ready, Jason.
I've already seen people. God, I forget what outlet it was. I don't know if it was maybe MMA Junkie or MMA Fighting that was already putting the article out there. So who's the backup plan if Conor Khabib doesn't make it to October 6th?
The answer is
here's the problem with that card. You know, that card is a one-fight pay-per-view that's getting your money. If one or both those guys don't make it to October 6th, oh, man, that is a disaster for the UFC.
What's the number two? I mean, especially for all those tickets they've sold, for the prices they've sold them at.
If Khabib falls out, the backup plan's got to be Nate Diaz.
100%, yeah.
Especially at that ticket price they sold those tickets at, it's got to be Nate Diaz. And then I think option two would have to be Tony Ferguson.
Yep, I mean they got the money in the bank to pay whoever they want to fight that day. They could probably pay Floyd Mayweather to step in that cage with all the money.
Don't you tempt the UFC? Don't you tempt?
I can't wait to preview Floyd versus Khabib.
Yeah, that'll never happen. The only way that would happen is if Khabib's not allowed to do a takedown.
Yeah, I think you're about right.
Yeah, that's actually a good buy sell. Floyd Mayweather fights in the UFC octagon at some point.
Sell. So, you're buying it?
Oof, man. If it was under some mixed rules where there was no takedowns, yeah. No takedowns, no kicks.
I can see that.
Basically, we're having a boxing match in the UFC octagon with 4-ounce gloves.
Yes, that's exactly how that would play out. That's exactly how we could see a Floyd in the cage. But he ain't going in there with a fighter where they can take him down.
No. I will tell you this. I'm like, you know, we got GGG Canelo coming up in a couple weeks. Looking forward to that one, though.
I absolutely cannot wait for that. I hope it happens. I hope there's no Mexican meat being eaten that will be causing this fight to get canceled. But ever since they last fought, I want a conclusion. I want to see a winner, and I'm looking forward to it.
That's got to be the question mark, I think. I mean, we're both combat sports fans. Is how many people are going to buy both GGG Canelo and Conor Khabib?
I think there's going to be – it's big event viewing. I think you're going to have the same people buy both fight cards. I really do. I don't think they're going to hurt each other. I think Khabib, Conor, man, I don't know which one would do better. I think Khabib, Conor probably will, but maybe it's because I have my MMA underwear on.
Damn, that's a good question. Which one does more pay-per-view buys? Oof.
Yeah. My bet is Conor could be, but I could be wrong. I think of the four, Conor's the bigger star, and then Canelo and GGG are 2 and 3, and then there's Nurmagomedov.
I mean, you're seeing the UFC is talking about 2 million buys for Conor Khabib. I think that's a little high.
Yeah, maybe it will be Canelo GGG the more I think about it. I don't know.
If one of them gets a 2 million buys, I would, man. God, I'd probably say Canelo GGG.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I think that's probably the smarter answer the more I think about it.
They're both great fights.
Yeah.
Even though GGG got screwed in the first fight. He got screwed.
He did.
I remember I was out watching that. When that decision got read, I just was like, are you kidding me?
They just wanted to print money on another one.
Ugh. And that's why a lot of people hate the boxing game. You know, I mean, look, it happens in MMA too. We see bad decisions. It's not like it's just a boxing issue. It happens in MMA as well.
Yeah, it does. And it's one of those things where there's the controversy, but then everyone's back for the second fight anyway. All the people that swore off the sport, still lining up to buy that next pay-per-view.
Exactly, exactly. So that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. If you're not subscribing to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or Google Play, we really appreciate it. And also, we'd really appreciate if you'd leave us a five-star review. Coming up on next week's edition of the podcast, we are going to recap UFC Lincoln, plus going to be joined by Cody Stamann and Frank Camacho. So look forward to those interviews here on next week's podcast. Do want to thank Alex Hernandez, Chito Vera, and Greg Rebell, all coming on this week's edition of the podcast, which you hear every Wednesday morning on RadioInfluence.com.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
The latest is, obviously, the committee has rendered their findings. They have verbally met with the board, 19-member board at Ohio State, and have given them kind of some information in which they are spending time today absorbing. They will meet tomorrow, the board will, at 9 o'clock local time, Columbus, and will have, by law they have to do this, they'll have an open session, which would be very, very brief, and then they'll go in chambers and render a decision. It's already been floated out there, a suspension for Urban Meyer. That's going to be, it'll be interesting to see how they word it, be interesting to see how they go forward with it. But what it really is going to come down to, I think, is they're going to admit maybe certain flaws on how they've handled things, could have done things better. This was, you know, quote unquote, eye opening, whatever, however they're going to phrase it. They're going to do their best to make Urban Meyer look as clean as they can with this. The public stain is embarrassing. He clearly enabled Zach Smith on his staff for a long time. And there are more situations that have come out, will likely come out, as things that were very unsavory that happened. This coincides with what I told you here about assistants on the Ohio State staff that were not happy with Zach Smith being on the staff. They didn't like him. They thought that there were different set of rules for them and him. And that's really come to light.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.